not Ashley.
Who are you?
Sarah.
Yay. Yay. Sarah, everyone. Our Ashley is in recovery, would you say? She's...
Misery?
Yeah,
she's in dental misery.
She's a
Oh, I'm about to...
There you go. So yeah, she's in dental misery. So everybody, send her all of your funny memes because that's just her thing. We love it too. So yeah, make us laugh. She could use some laughs. It's tough, tough business. Yes. So yes. Fingers crossed that she's okay. She's okay soon. So, but anyway, yes. So you're Speedy here. Recovery. We are so happy.
I am,
happy.
And I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
So excited too.
I'm just so excited.
So what are you drinking tonight?
Okay. I can't be a guest on here and not have my White Claw. Tonight I'm drinking a lemon White Claw. But I have a beer on standby because I had a feeling I was gonna need it. And I have it. I have my Galveston Coconut Heffen A that is a seasonal, and I just love it. Ashley is the one who told me about it last year, and I'm excited to pound my White Claw and then pound that one after.
You know, it's like only an hour show. Just like
I know. I can do some work. Challenge accepted.
No pounding necessary. It's just, you know, you got like a half hour. Yeah, it's good. That's plenty of time.
Plenty of time. Yes.
I think if you have more than one an hour, it's a problem, but we're not telling anybody that.
Probably. No.
All right.
Don't tell the hubs.
So, yeah.
Well, what are you drinking?
Oh, look at you. See? You do listen. I've actually got I was a little sad that Ashley wasn't going to be here today because I'm actually really stoked about this can.
Ooh.
It is beautiful. So it comes from Belching Beaver.
Okay. It's a heck of a name.
It's a good name. Anyway, but that's like you can see like a Day of the Dead Beaver kind of face there,
yes.
Right?
It's a really
anyway,
rad
so this
can.
Is Belching Beaver Deftones, as in the band Deftones. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's called Phantom Bride, named after the Deftones song, Phantom Bride. And it is an IPA. Nice. It is a collaboration between the two. So I'm pretty excited. I'm going to taste it right now for the first time.
Yes. I want to know your reaction.
Oh, that's good. It's actually kind of okay. This like very smooth and nutty. It's not super hoppy. Very delicious. Like it. Cool. Oh, it's nice. A 7.10%. All right.
Oh, was that a 16-ounce can?
That is. This is a 1 pint. I like it. It's nice, right? Yeah.
I was going to say, it's a big can.
It is big. It's or my beautiful. Hands are just really small. That is not true either. Anyway, so how has your new year been? We're coming up on Valentine's Day, and my goodness, it's been 2 years since we started the show.
I know. Just the other day on my memories, last year's 1 year anniversary popped up.
Popping champagne.
I got all weepy. I was like, for one, that was the last time I was physically on a show. And two, that was probably only a month before y'all were physically together for shows. Because early March is whenever, you know, shit hit the fan. So anyways, that aside, I'm really excited y'all have celebrated your 2 year. It's so exciting.
She remembered and posted. I forgot completely. And I texted her and I'm like, how did it? It's already come and gone. And she was like, girl, that's okay. Like, I didn't really remember either. Yes. It popped up on her timeline. So that's how she remembered. Anyway, so happy anniversary to all of you listeners who have stuck around for 2 years. God bless you, everyone.
God bless you. No, I'm just
kidding. Thanks to all of you.
The real award goes to you guys.
And hey, all of you new listeners, you don't know what you got yourselves into. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Very true.
So We've done a lot of murder lately. Murder. So I asked Sarah, I said, hey, since you're going to be on the show with me, do you, you know where I'm going with this?
I feel like yes, I do.
If I put it out there, then if anything happens, we won't get in trouble.
Exactly.
So I asked her, like, do you have a story idea? And she says, I know you've done a lot of murders lately.
But it's what I'm really into right now. Within, Kat replies, me too. And about an hour and a half later.
I love a good murder.
Yes. About an hour and a half later, it dawned on me that I did not mention the show. I was not clear at all on what we were discussing. And that my text comes off horribly wrong in text form out of context. So we cannot commit any crimes anytime soon because we implicated ourselves without even trying.
So listen, so, yeah. I can't ever commit a crime because my search history right. is whack. It is scary. Yes. I don't know if I could ever really date anybody because then they would go, what is she looking at? You know, like on Google, and it's just like crazy. Mm-mm. So I can never be dating again. So Jason's stuck with me. But
And whenever I told Justin or showed him our text exchange, he confirmed, yes, that was not good indeed.
In law enforcement.
He's a cop. So but we need to be on our P's and Q's.
No killing anybody. Note to self. Right. Okay, so I had a question of the week, and I don't know if you answered it online or not, but the question was...
I saved it.
Okay, good.
Yes.
What isn't illegal but should be? Now, most people gave me the wrong answer only, but some people got real serious with it, and I'm like, y'all are too serious.
Someone too serious. Was very serious.
I was just looking for like camel toe. That should be illegal, right? Okay, so Sarah, what is your it should be illegal?
It should be illegal to have 40-hour work weeks. That should be illegal. It should be.
That's pretty deep too, though.
Yeah, I was trying to be very light and fun with it. But we should have like minimal hour work weeks. 40 hours.
40 hours.
2-day weekends.
Maybe 30 hours. Like 6 days. If you have to put everything in a shorter amount of time, you probably work harder. Like, listen, man.
Right. Yeah. Quality, not quantity.
Right. Well, so I might offend some people, and I know I might lose a listener or two. But this is very serious. This is my very serious thing. Wearing pajamas and slippers to Target.
Or Walmart.
To JCPenney or wherever. Outside of your home. I'm sorry.
I don't. Wholeheartedly.
I got dressed. I showered. I got dressed. I put on some makeup to go outside to be seen in public. And all have matching family pajamas in slippers going to Target, you know, and I'm like, what is this? It's not that cold outside. It's, you know.
Yes.
That's my thing.
I feel like there's a very brief window you should be allowed to get away with it if we're being nice. But
is it 7 a.m. and your pregnant wife needs you to go pick something up or whatever?
Twilight hours? Twilight hours.
11:30 in the afternoon? No.
No.
Well, in the morning, I guess.
Yeah.
Still no. It's before noon, but still no. So I can't wait to read all. I just saw some of them come up, but I was just like, I got a text like, this is what I really wanted to say. And I'm like, wrong answers only. And that's what I said, like, you know, camel toe, that should be illegal. Yes. That should be like, ah.
I feel like there were a lot of answers like to be this sexy or to look this good. I liked those.
I can't wait to get to those. I haven't read those. All right. So I'm going to, when I was looking for a story tonight, I immediately, because I was like, man, I don't want to do like another murder. Although this isn't completely away from that, but it is bizarre. So I was really looking for bizarre. And so when I came across this one website, it was one of the first things that popped up on it. And I didn't take anything else from it, but it was odd prisoner lawsuits. And I was like, what? I want to know what prisoners, like prisoners sued the prisons. Like, that's crazy.
Well, yeah, because they have so much time. Don't they like research that stuff?
So, but listen, okay.
Okay,
These people are petty AF, okay? These people. Okay, so Lawrence Bittaker claimed he had been subjected to cruel and unusual punishment, that was in quotes, because he received a broken cookie on his lunch tray. And his sandwich was soggy. Richard Burton sued the state of California because his stomach hurt after eating chili.
Whose stomach doesn't hurt?
That's what chili is.
We're allowed to sue someone for that. I'd be a millionaire if I won all those. Ooh,
Jason! All right. Kevin Howard sued the state of California, claiming the Department of Corrections planted a device in his brain to control his thoughts, and then his thoughts were broadcasted on the prison loudspeakers. That's not petty. That's cray. Okay, isn't it?
So, he's in the wrong facility.
I don't know. Prison was really where you needed to be. Okay, so while on death row at San Quentin State Prison, Rodney Alcala sued the state claiming his civil rights were violated because his packages were sent via UPS instead of USPS.
And he was mad about that? I feel like my stuff going UPS, not USPS.
What did I say? Petty
AF. And
he
was getting packages? Getting packages in prison?
Yes.
Is his Amazon Prime not coming quick enough for him? How do you get prison packages?
Okay.
That seems like something we should be able to sue.
He deserves mail. He can get mail. They didn't say Amazon.
Okay.
All right. So Joseph Gonzalez sued the state of New York after receiving a bad haircut at Sing Sing Prison. He claims he lost sleep and suffered headaches and chest pains after being given a defective haircut. Petty AF. Okay, Kenneth Parker was upset when he ordered 2 jars of chunky peanut butter at the Nevada State Prison canteen and received 1 chunky and 1 creamy. He sued for mental and emotional pain, asking for $5,500 and the imprisonment of a prison official. The case went on for 2 years before finally being dismissed. They're bored. Frederick Woods and 2 accomplices kidnapped a bus driver and 26 school children and buried them underground. ABC aired a made-for-TV movie based on the case, and Woods viewed it and was very offended. He sued the network, saying the show portrayed him as being callous, vicious, hardened, and uncaring. Looks like an uck. Walks like an uck.
Scott gets arrested like a duck.
Quack, quack. All right, Scott Gomez tried to escape from the Pueblo County Jail in Colorado. He made a candle and melted the tiles on the ceiling of his cell and made it to the jail's roof. When he climbed on the roof and tried to scale the wall, he fell down 40 feet. Gomez sued, saying the jail was responsible for his injuries because they failed to provide ceiling tiles that could not be removed by melting them with a homemade candle, and, quote, ignored his propensity to escape, as he had done so on 2 different occasions.
Interesting.
He's very crafty. He's crafty.
Yeah.
All right.
He gets around.
All right. Okay. Robert Paul Rice sued Utah State Prison for violating his freedom of religion. Rice claimed that his religion was the, quote, vampire order, end quote, and he needed to have his religious needs met, including, but not limited to, a vampire diet, which was grains and vegetables and a vampress, so he could join the vampiric sacrament. I wonder if that worked for him. James Higginson sued the state of Indiana, stating that prison officials violated his constitutional rights when they denied him access to pornography, quote, causing him pain, suffering, humiliation, and mental anguish, emotional distress, and financial loss. Not sure how all of those things...
That sounded like a prescription drug side effects list.
Might cause you to kill yourself. Not really sure that you want to take this medicine.
Bizarre.
Side effects include increased risk to punch yourself in the face. Call your doctor if you experience this for longer than 4 hours.
Exactly. That is what his lawsuit sounded like.
So, all right, last one. While incarcerated at a Virginia prison, did I say incarcerated right? Didn't sound like I did. Anyway, at a Virginia prison, Robert Lee Brock sued himself. He claimed his civil rights as well as his religious beliefs were violated when he allowed himself to get drunk. He demanded $5 million from himself.
What?
But didn't earn any wages in prison, so he felt the state should pay on his behalf.
He's
crafty.
Loophole.
God, that's so, it's like, it starts out, what? I see what you did there.
Clever guy. Clever duck.
I see what you did there. Clever duck. I need a duck mascot now. All right, that was really funny. All right, so, okay. So, take a deep breath. No, I'm kidding. All right, so tonight's story is, in one word, bizarre. I wanted to know about bizarre crimes, and so I got those bizarre lawsuits. So we're going to talk about the story, which is really, in one word, bizarre. But it does totally go with what I'm really interested in, which is cults. Now, so this isn't about, I've done a lot of cult stories. And this isn't about a cult in quotes per se, but about how a single person, a single young person was able to influence so many people in such a short amount of time. All takes place in less than the 30 years of her life. She was 28. When this all was, so very young person and was able to do so much and so little. And so that's what gets me about the story, like how somebody can have so much influence over somebody else, like that they throw everything else to the wind.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So tonight I'm going to talk to you about, it's a 19th century story. So this takes place mainly in the early 1800s. Her name was Margareta Peter. Is it Peter because she's from Switzerland? I don't know, but we're just going to say Peter because I couldn't find another pronunciation of that. All right.
And we're in Texas. So we are allowed to say stuff funny. You know. At least I use that as an excuse on a daily basis.
And this is Case Files with Kat and Ashley.
Bless her heart. Yours too.
Yeah, mispronounce things all the time.
All day, every day.
But Isle of Wit was probably that's what's the Isle of Wight. So funny. Okay, all right. So Glenn was like, "What? That's terrible." All right,
and she couldn't, like, she tried so hard to make it right, and then when Glenn was like, "Yeah, no fool, it's white," like. Bless her heart.
We love you, Glenn. All right. Yes. And we love you, Ashley. Up. Okay. All right. So, all right. Margareta Peter. I know many of you have not heard of her, but it definitely took me some reading. And wow, the story just got a little bit crazier and crazier. I got information from a few different resources. So I want to make sure I tell you that up front because I might plagiarize the shit out of one of these guys. But the first one was from the website called recountandreveal.com. It was a blog called The Dangers of Influence, Margareta Peter. And that was written in August 16th, 2019 by Jordan McCaw. Also ancient-origins.net. And it was the crucifixion of Margarita Peter, which already sounds interesting.
Spoiler
right?
alert.
Spoiler alert. And then the last one, which is the one I'm going to really be talking about, is from Bruminate.com, The Crucifixion of Margarita Peter by Romeo Vitelli. This was written in 2017, March 21st, 2017. And Dr. Romeo Vitelli is a psychologist. So he's got a very good take on the story of Margarita. I'm going to say Margarita. Alrighty, now on to Margarita. Okay, let's stop mispronouncing her name. So Margarita was born on Christmas Day in 1794. This is amazingly very apt to the story I'm about to tell. Like Christmas Day, right? It's Jesus' birthday, right? So she was born in a, quote, insignificant hamlet of Wildesbuch. Wildesbuch? Don't know. It is a very small little town. It was in northern Switzerland. She was the youngest of five daughters born to John, Peter, and his wife. But at a very young age, Margarita lost her mom. And this isn't to say, because this is Case Files with Kat and Ashley, that she had a horrible upbringing. Because I know, like, right around here, we're like, oh, obviously.
Didn't stand a chance.
So she did not have a horrible life, like we are used to saying on the show. So she had a pretty loving family. Her dad doted on her. She had two older sisters, and they were very, she had four older sisters. And so they treated her very well, but they also they revered her. And even as the youngest sister, she was still very, had garnered respect from everyone in her family. And she did that early.
Gotcha.
So Margarita was raised in the Zwinglian Protestant faith. That took me a second to say, Zwinglian Protestant faith, along with the rest of her family. I had never heard of this, so I had to look it up. So basically, the Zwinglian Protestants were followers of the teachings of Ulrich Zwingli, who was basically preaching about the reforming the Catholic Church. And so depending on some context, Zwingli was before Martin Luther.
Okay.
All right. So it's like he was all about, like, he didn't believe, you know, he thought that priests should be able to get married. So there was things about the Catholic Church that he was already preaching about in the 1700s that should be reformed.
Gotcha.
So they were all very devout followers of they were very religious. Anyway, this whole family. So she was growing up in this religious family. Margarita right away showed this remarkable religious passion, like from an early age. And her pastor was impressed, even like at first. I mean, she was reading the Bible, and she would call her family and neighbors around, and she would give sermons and have like prayer circles and stuff. I mean, like this is when she was in first grade. Like, it's crazy. Wow. Like, she was very, very, she was very religious. And so they really early on, her dad and her sisters, this is why they respected her so much. They thought she was special. So, like I said, despite being the youngest child, Margarita had a very big personality, very big. She could dominate her sisters, dominate them all. Two of them who managed to get married still went to her for religious opinions, moral teachings to steer them in the right direction. And she was,
wow.
Yeah. Like she was that dominant. And then her younger sisters would, the younger of the older sisters would become her most devout disciples as things got older in every way that mattered. They were her most devout followers.
I'm already nervous.
I know. Her father himself would say of her that, quote, "I am assured that my youngest daughter was set apart by God for some extraordinary purpose."
Which could be bad. And I think that's where we're going.
This is a really happy story. No, I'm just kidding. No, but this is like, no, seriously. So even after all of that, all of what's coming happened, that is what her father said about her. After all is said and done, this is what he said about her. So along with the regular prayer sessions, she also urged her father and siblings to live in complete accordance with Christ's teachings as she defined them. So just like any other cult leader, I am going to read the Bible as I've read the Bible, and I am going to make sense of it how I will, and then I'm going to make you follow whatever I say. That's just, you can have a different reading of it, but you're going to follow what I say.
Okay.
Which is insane.
Okay.
For a little child. So. Yes. Even when she took her first communion in 1811, she amazed her congregation with her religious fervor and sheer joy. So, like I said earlier, her mom had died, but in 1816, her uncle invited her to live with him in a nearby town of Rudolfingen. Yep, that's exactly how it's spelled.
Right.
Rudolfingen. And act as his housekeeper. So this is where she learned about the fundamentalist pietists. I didn't look this. I was like, you know what? This is a lot of religious history. But basically, they were extremely fundamentalist Lutherans. And they were spreading at this point across many parts of Europe. But unfortunately, this exposure to pietism also meant a radical change in her personality. Like, the last thing this girl needed was to meet someone else, like a more devout, like, this is, you know, so she was already, she
mega.
Had her,
yeah. And now she's like ultra mega.
she was extra at this point. So her siblings, even at this point, were really disturbed by it. They were upset by watching her. She kind of became depressed. They would ask, because she was normally kind of a happy girl, but they would ask her why she was so despondent. And, quote, she replied that God was revealing himself to her and making her more aware of her own sinful nature.
What? So is there any history like?
So there's nothing written. That's a really, really good question. There's actually nothing written as to what sins exactly she was talking about. She became more and more concerned about the sins of the world, especially her own, but nobody ever was told what those were. There's no history of that. There might have been told, but there's no history of it.
Well, being a true crime junkie that I am, I automatically think of the uncle and something bad happening, or you know what I mean? Like,
she was already there, though. She was already, I get it. I think that's where my mind went too. But
you know what I mean? Like, just something triggering her.
I think she was becoming a teenager. And I think that she probably had some of her own, like, I saw a cute guy and I'm not supposed to have found him, like, hot.
Right. And pure thoughts,
Right. And so I think she started to just go through puberty and she started to, right? I mean, because she wasn't very...
Yeah, no, I agree.
So 1817. She was born in when? Look, I already forgot.
94.
So 94. So 1816. So, oh, she was past that. So she was a young woman at this point.
Yes.
Young woman, so early 20s. So she was probably like needing some and probably saw a cute guy, maybe got frisky with someone from the Pietists who was also young and, you know, who knows? So all kinds of things could have happened. Anyway, all right. So she was aware of her own sinful nature. So she, you know, that's it.
Gotcha.
But just the beginning. So by 1817, she had left her uncle's home and returned to her dad's home in that town, I'm not going to say again, to establish herself as a revivalist to preach the word of God. So this meant returning to her father's home and getting to know the three new servants who had been hired while she was away. We're going to start with Heinrich Ernst, Ursula Kundig, and Margaret Jagli. I'm sorry if I mispronounced those names. Both.
I feel like you did great.
I was pretty close anyway. Both servants would soon play an important role in Margaret's strange crusade. Because Margaret Jagli, she had epileptic seizures that she hoped that Margaretta could cure with her religious powers.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, we do this now, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
Pray over people to take away their aches and pains. And that's, so it's not far off. This has been happening a long time. So, she hoped that her prayer would help her. Heinrich, for his blind loyalty to the Peter family and Ursula, who asked Margaretta to be her spiritual guide through life and eternity.
Okay.
So these
people are still doing
three
that shit too.
Three servants. Yeah. Three servants immediately meet her and become the most devout followers. Like, upon meeting her, they saw something in her, and that was it. Like, she had the it factor.
She had it.
So it was Ursula who became Margaretta's most fervent disciple, though. In lavishing praise on her new spiritual mentor, Ursula openly said of Margaretta that, quote, Christ revealed himself in the flesh through her, and that through her many thousands of souls were saved. End quote.
Wow. So
that's deep.
That is deep. And that's Ursula proclaiming that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's Ursula speaking about Margaretta.
Okay.
Almost inevitably, the Pater household was flooded by all these other people from all over the area. They had all heard about Margaretta, so they all wanted to hear from Margaretta. They wanted to hear the sermons that everyone had talked about. They wanted to, I mean, so here she has these servants that were going out in the town being like, the physical manifestation of Christ is, we are working for her. You guys got to come, you know, hear her speak. And so people started just showing up. I know.
Wow.
So she soon, though, became tired of her father's household and by 1820 decided to travel across the country preaching her gospel. She went alone a lot, not all the time, but she often took either her devoted sister Elizabeth or Ursula with her.
Okay.
So these crusades drew people from all over Switzerland. And to me, Switzerland's so small. I think Texas is bigger. I mean, so like traveling back and forth through Texas, like that seems, I'm not sure though. But it was during the course of her wandering that she met a shoemaker named Jacob Morf. Aww, but Jacob was married.
Aww. Oh.
Morf seemed to be mesmerized by Margaretta, and she quickly came to feel the same about him. Aww.
So, I'm like, uh-oh.
What?
All I can think of is, uh-oh. And you're like, aw.
Yeah, no. Well, then he's married. Aw. It's hard to say whether there was anything physical in their relationship. She and Morph exchanged passionate letters that are still preserved in a Zurich archive. She also announced to him that they would ascend to heaven together and would share one throne for all eternity.
Ooh.
She thought very highly of herself. So yeah. Morph's wife, Regula, Regula, I don't know, was less than thrilled by this strange relationship, though her husband managed to relieve her suspicions for a little while. So in late 1822, police became alerted when Margareta and Elizabeth vanished without a trace. And after months of searching, the two women turned up on their own on January 8th, 1823. Though Margareta was pale and like ill, she got skinny, she refused to say where she and her sister had been. And not long afterward, Jacob Morph turned up at the Peter House, apparently due to a message from Margareta that the two of them would soon be ascending to heaven together. It's about to get real.
That's right. All right.
Get down. Scandalous. What? Lots of go down. What? I don't remember the 90s song. All right. So. I don't have another sip of beer. Hold on.
Me too. I'm already on my second, by the way. Just to keep y'all informed.
I'm sure they were wondering. All right. Mm-hmm. So whatever had happened during her absence, Margareta's behavior was more bizarre than ever. Yes. She and Elizabeth confined themselves to a single room in the house where they read the Bible and prayed almost nonstop.
They went on like a wicked bender and felt wicked guilty afterwards.
I thought the same thing.
They lived life, man, and then they felt guilty for it.
I totally thought the same thing. That's really funny. So she seemed obsessed with earning God's forgiveness. She never shared what the sins were, but she was begging for God's forgiveness for her sins.
Only she kept a journal, God, that would have been some good
maybe
reading.
Morph has some good letters. When not in her room praying, she would often come downstairs to meet with her followers and share her prophecies with them. As for Jacob Morph, well, he eventually went back home to his wife. And he had a job, and, you know, you gotta do those things. Gotta be an adult.
Gotta adult.
So he peaced out. He peaced the F out. So, of course, what happens when, like, your crush, like, bails on you? You get a little sad, a little crazy. So her religious obsession became even stronger. And, here comes Easter. That's a big day, you know, that's when, you know, Jesus is risen. And so she starts to go a little bit crazier. And so during one of her episodes, she announced.
As we all do around Easter.
I know. Well, when you're a cult leader, you probably have to think about it a little bit. Behold, I see the host of Satan drawing nearer and nearer to encompass me. He strives to overcome me. Let me alone that I may fight him. Like, what was she going to do? Like, what was she going to do, though? Really? Like, so she's just like, so there's all these people in the room, and she's like, I see, you know, like, it's very dramatic, and she's excited, and she's like looking around. And so everyone's like, oh God, what is she seeing? And so they're all kind of looking around too, right? Like, oh my God,
freaking out too. She's freaking out.
She's freaking out. Yes. Right. So anyway, so she apparently believed, or said she believed that the devil would be coming to claim the souls of all humanity, and that she alone stood in his way. So with that in mind, she ordered the house to be closed up completely, with no, quote, worldly people being allowed to cross the threshold. And so that included the local pastor. That's not good. And he was expressing concerns about what was happening because, I mean, behold, yes. I see Satan drawing near. And given the control Margareta had over the entire household, they did exactly as she said. They boarded it up.
Of course.
And kept everybody out. So anybody who was there stayed there willingly.
Ay, ay, ay.
So,
meanwhile, the pastor's like, so I know a little bit about this stuff, and I don't think this is right.
He's anywhere. He's not here. He's definitely the next town over. So considering the religious... Considering the religious hysteria that had gripped the entire household, things went pretty much as you might expect. You think it's going to go pretty bad? You think it's going to go bad? One evening, Margaret Jugley, okay, one of the servants, reacted to hearing a loud pop from the fireplace by going into convulsions. She had epilepsy.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, okay.
Screaming that the devil had come for her, she pleaded with Margaret and the others to pray and save her soul. This led Margareta to scream out, "Depart, thou murderer of souls, accursed one, to hellfire! Wilt thou try to rob me of my sheep that was lost? My sheep whom I have pledged myself to save?" I guess they were her sheep, not like farm animals.
Yeah, she's the shepherd.
She is the shepherd.
She thinks she's Jesus.
And here comes Easter. It's coming, remember? Though Margaret soon recovered, she continued to have seizures, and the rest of the household began having religious visions themselves. That's called going crazy. They were probably not eating, maybe some too much wine. Margaret wrote to Jacob Morf, Margaret, that's horrible. Bad person. Wrote to Jacob Morf, Epilepsy Margaret. I'm so sorry. That was so rude.
It was very insensitive. I'm sorry.
It's very rude of all of us. All right. So anyway, so Margaret wrote to Jacob Morf to come to her aid. Like, come and help us. This is not, something's happening.
And shit's getting real weird.
It's about to get real. On March 8th, 1823. Did I still say it wrong? It's about to go down. God damn it. He finally arrived at Margareta's father's house along with two other believers. And then all of the true believers, all of them. So he didn't come there to save her. They came to be there.
To join the party.
Uh-huh. They gathered under one roof and in a state of acute religious mania, the final battle for Armageddon could begin.
That ready. Sentence is so crazy. That whole sentence is bizarre. Go on.
So we don't know what really happened in that house. I don't know that anybody really told the truth about what happened in that house. But we know, he calls her Saintly Margareta. And I don't know that she was ever a saint. She went over the edge. She went from religious mania to full-blown delusion. So based on the testimony of her family members and followers who were holed up with her in the house for a week in 1823, Margareta's enthusiastic prayers and fasting convinced her believers that something amazing was about to happen. Even if one or two of them were less convinced about her holy mission, they didn't seem inclined to argue with the others. Eventually,
that's like the train wreck. You just stop and watch.
What's going to happen? Eventually,
happening next?
Margareta gathered her disciples around her and reportedly said, "Lo, I see Satan and his firstborn floating in the air. They are dispersing their emissaries to all corners of the earth to summon their armies together. Her suggestible sister, Elizabeth, promptly announced that she saw them as well. She then began to prophesy that the son of Napoleon, the Duke of Reichstadt, would soon announce himself as the Antichrist and that the final battle would then begin. Wow. After making this prophecy, Margareta went into a wild frenzy and began smashing furniture and attacking walls with a hammer. And it was at that point the maid Margaret went into convulsions, which Margareta took as a divine sign. And she cried out, "I see in spirit the old Napoleon gathering a mighty host and marching against me. The contest will be terrible. You must wrestle unto blood. Go! Fly! Fetch me axes, clubs, whatever you can find. Bar the doors, curtain all the windows in the house, and close every shutter." She yelled a lot.
You are like performing a monologue of your life right now.
Like, you're so this good. Is not even, I'm just reading.
You're doing so good.
Thank you.
Okay. Kevin? I feel like I know it's not that stressful, but I'm like waiting for the shoe to drop. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So the followers, of course, do exactly as she says. And they got all the stuff. They gathered in her bedroom and they had all the tools. And some of them would report afterward to seeing divine visions themselves due to her fanaticism. I get that. I do get that. Yeah. But I also think that they were probably not, it was not a well-ventilated house, I bet. They probably weren't eating enough.
That's what I was thinking.
They probably were dehydrated. There's so many things. I think it was like a perfect storm.
So many factors. Yeah.
She told everyone to start smashing. Hulk smash. So they just started smashing everything in the room until she told them to stop, which they promptly did for 3 hours.
Crazy.
They just banged and crashed and smashed and axed and hammered everything for 3 hours. How tired are you going to be after 10 minutes?
No kidding.
I mean, I am not. Yeah. I mean, I know I'm out of shape, but I mean, just like, like that just.
Me too.
You know, there's a
and
rage
to have
room.
Control.
They have,
I know.
I want to do that. Axe Masters. They have a rage room. I need to do that.
They have a rage room. I just learned that.
I'm going to like throw my shoulder out. I can't do that kind of stuff, you know, because I'll just dislocate everywhere. But
to have control over people, like we raise tiny humans and I don't know about you. I can't even get them to clean up
wash your
after
hands.
Themselves.
Wash your hands. Like, wash your hands.
And she had these people rampaging in court and like,
someone
I say
else's house.
I just don't get it.
So if any of them slowed down to fatigue, she would tell them, tell the others to strike him, cut him. The old adversary, the arch fiend, who so loatheth his life shall find it. Fear nothing. Smite till your blood runs down as sweat. She was telling them to smite people. That's fucked up.
Yeah.
So even as this was happening, a large crowd has started, like, they were outside. People could hear it. So people started getting gathering yeah. outside. And, I mean, yeah, the noise.
I can only imagine. Like, think of when an ambulance comes on your street, like, all the neighbors come outside to watch. Could you imagine these people are probably like, what the hell is going on in there?
Did you get the popcorn? Oh, honey, I brought the wine. Okay, what's going on? Right. So
wonder if anybody tried to see what's going on, if anybody need help.
Well,
anybody needs help.
So,
okay, go on.
The hammering, the axing, the whatever part of the wall of the house started to fall away. So they were like, we're starting to be open to the whole neighborhood, right?
Okay.
So they could all see. They could see everything for themselves. And so she saw the watching crowd and denounced them as enemies of God. Yeah. Like, you guys are just nosy. Nosy rosies. All right. So once the room was completely destroyed, Margareta led her exhausted followers downstairs to recover in the somewhat intact sitting room, but only for like an hour. We only got an hour, which is when she ordered her worshipers to start beating themselves.
Oh.
And they did.
My gosh. Oh my gosh.
The only exception was Margareta's sister Elizabeth, who asked her sister, Margareta, to beat her instead. So she asked Margareta to beat her. As before, whenever anyone began to tire, she ordered them to strike harder. Even her father wasn't exempted, and after his enthusiasm flagged, his saintly daughter began pummeling him herself.
What?
It gets
this escalated
crazier. So eventually the local police decided to investigate what was happening.
Eventually.
The house has already started to fall apart. And now the police show up when people are like screaming and wailing inside. So Margareta went into hysterics at seeing the police. They're invading her sacred space. This is my safe space. And there was like some wrangling, of course. I mean, they were trying to protect people. And so eventually they got everyone to like different rooms of the house, not separated from other women. Margareta continued to rouse them into religious fervor while the men slowly settled down. That was dumb. Though the order was eventually passed down that Margareta and Elizabeth should be sent to an asylum, it would prove to be too late. Though some of the followers had been dispatched home, most were still present when Margareta assembled the remaining family members in the upper room of the house. The tools used to destroy the room were still lying there, and Margareta began preaching the need for a final battle to defeat the Antichrist. When her brother, Casper, came to the house at the request of the police, Margareta attacked him with one of the tools. Finally intervening, her father stopped her and then carried his injured son downstairs. As a result, he missed what happened next. Upstairs, Margareta asked the ones still remaining if they were still willing to die for salvation. Elizabeth promptly said she was and began beating herself for Margareta. She needed to go to an asylum. So not satisfied with this effort, she decided she was going to strike her sister in the head with a hammer because that was better. And so she did that. And the others, apparently inspired by this, helped to beat Elizabeth to death.
Oh my God.
Afterward, Margareta told the others, "More blood must flow. I have pledged myself for the saving of many souls. I must die now. You must crucify me."
Even with Elizabeth's dead body at their feet, the followers were reluctant to follow Margareta's orders, insisting that, quote, "It is better that I should die than the thousands of souls should perish. She struck herself in the head with a hammer and then ordered the others to gather wood and nails.
My gosh.
I can't even imagine like hitting myself that hard.
No.
Like that's just, wow. Though the manservant Heinrich promptly fled the scene, the others proceeded to nail Margareta's hands and feet to blocks of wood and then mounted her on the wall. Margareta seemed completely immune to the pain, even as she was being crucified, and insisted that she would raise herself and Elizabeth 3 days after her death. Only after ordering them to beat in her skull did she finally die.
Oh, where is Kevin M.G.?
Oh my God. That's like bananas crazy.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Yes.
So caught up in the bizarre religious delusion that had led them to commit murder, the remaining followers then quietly went downstairs to dinner.
Naturally. I just scared Birdie when I did that. She like jumped.
A policeman came by and had Margaret's father sign a writ guaranteeing that they all appear before the magistrate. Nobody mentioned that Margaretta and Elizabeth were dead upstairs, and the policeman promptly left. 3 days later, with nobody outside the house being aware of what happened, Ursula and Heinrich went upstairs to remove the nails from Margaretta's body. If they had been hoping that this would hasten her resurrection, they were wrong. Only after another 2 days of prayer did John Peter finally walk into town to tell the pastor that two of his daughters were dead.
Could you imagine that conversation?
So
we're really holding out hope that they would be resurrected. Turns out, didn't happen. If you could just head down to the house and help us out with the funeral, like, I can't even.
It's, So, after a two-day trial that began December 3rd, 1823, most of the people who had been present when Margaretta and Elizabeth died received prison sentences. Ursula received the longest sentence, 16 years. While the others received...
They killed them.
I know. While the others received sentences ranging from 8 years to only a few months. John Peter, father to both dead women, was sentenced to 8 years in prison. Perhaps as a way of keeping the Peter house from becoming a pilgrimage site, the judge also ordered it to be leveled to the ground and that no house would ever be built on the site again. While some pietists did manage to visit the house before its destruction, the story of Margaretta's crucifixion quickly faded into local legend.
That's crazy.
Now, I know this is like a totally bizarre, I mean it is, it's a bizarre, sorry Birdie for scaring you. This is a really, really
She's
bizarre,
like growling
and us. Kind of, there's still so much unknown about it. And I think that's what makes it really interesting. Like, gosh, what, she didn't write a journal. And so what were these sins that she was so worried about? And we're just here left to speculate, right? But how does one person draw so many followers to her? Not only that, how does she convince them to harm one another? And then her.
I know.
And sometimes it comes down to the right circumstances, like the right moment in history when all the right people's paths crossed.
Yeah.
Like Heaven's Gate was compromised of two leaders, and they convinced dozens of people to leave their families, their jobs, and everything to get rid of everything that was them for this greater cause.
But like those things I can kind of understand because they learn how to manipulate and brainwash those who are easy. Like, you know, you can pinpoint those type of people who are vulnerable to mind control, we'll say. But like this chick was born and had at an early age the ability to
manipulate. Yeah.
And I would go to say, like, she definitely had a mental illness of some sort, you know, like, and really, I don't even want to say that because I don't want to insult anybody with mental illness, but, like, she obviously was not there.
Narcissism? Because she was able to, I mean.
But, like, her family, how were they also damaged to have followed her and then harm themselves and others?
And to hurt to hurt her sister.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy.
People who are supposed to love you are...
Right.
And then for her sister to be like, no, take me instead. Okay.
Sure. Sure.
I was just kidding. I was just seeing if you would do it.
I know. God, you bitch. I didn't think you'd really do it.
No. Perhaps God did have divine plans for her. Perhaps that was, she just used that. I don't know, but we'll never know. Most of her story is lost to history. So we will never know, but It is.
And it is a crazy story from how far, like how old it is.
Right?
How long ago it was. Yes.
I'm glad you liked my monologuing.
And Lord knows, they might have all had like a, might have all had like a brain fungus or some
shit.
Oh my God. Like that.
You know,
like,
you're not even wrong. You're not even wrong. Okay. So I'm going to read the answers to the question of the week. Thank you everybody for being here. If you're still here, we're going to not talk about Margareta anymore. Okay. So what isn't legal, but should be? Oh, so Jesse says, this is what I get for not reading it correctly. I read what is illegal and shouldn't be.
Would that list would so, go on I know, and on I know. And
so
on.
She said duels. So like, yeah, all right. So
a good old fashioned duel.
No maximum speed limits on highways, just minimum speed limits. I like that. I like that.
I love that.
So, and she actually thinks that duels should be, should not be illegal because no more passive aggressive crap and sneaky backstabbing. Just two people engaging in regulated fisticuffs. Problem solved. I love it. So yeah. So she's got the whole.
I'm here.
She's
for
thought
it.
This out. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like 5-step process. I think you should read it. It's on our Facebook page. Ashley, your Ashley says spam calls. Totally agree. Oh, Deb says men.
For real.
That shit's funny.
I hear you, girl.
So, Susan. She says, oh, my hotness.
This is Ashley's mom. And
Ashley says, mother, get in the corner.
I love it.
Susan. Oh my God. I can't breathe now. Okay. So then I put it onto my page and y'all motherfuckers took this way too seriously. I was just looking for some like funny, haha. I'm trying to laugh. But no, everyone got pretty serious. So
very serious.
So Scott Stillman says nothing. Lily says feeling this he fine. Sophie says spanking children. I'm going to just skip the ones I'm just going to roll my eyes at. Leslie says getting your kid kidnapped in the middle of the night to scare them into good behavior, i.e. scared straight. Wait, that happens?
Yeah, have you not seen the show Scared Straight on A&E?
I thought that was just like you take them to a prison and they see.
Well, that's what they do kidnap on you? The show. Well, I mean, I don't know. They take them in the middle of the night. The parents know. So is it kidnapping if the parents know?
Well, it's quote unquote kidnapping, right? Okay, so Elisa says women's pants without usable pockets. Word. Holly says pantyhose. Kimberly says a full package of Reese's peanut butter eggs in my kitchen. What? Steve says being this sexy. Another one. Oh, James, microwaving fish at work. I'm just like, who does that? That's like peeling a raw egg. Just Eric says funny. Mondays. Robin
same
says
girl or same boy, whoever that
Eric,
is.
Mondays, yeah.
Oh, I thought you said Aaron.
Robin says, disobeying the leash rule. Like, yes. She says, messaging friends pretending to care about their lives, but really you just want to sell them your sweet MLM product.
MLMs should 100% be legal, and I believe they kind of are, right? Pyramid schemes.
There's a lot. I don't know if they're illegal though. Scotty says, Dolly says, margarine and other hydrogenated oils. several people mentioned things that are illegal. Okay, so I'm like, okay, I skipped all those. Jamie Sanchez says saving spaces in line. I like that one. Not Hillary yes. says not using a turn signal. Yes.
Yes.
Leanne says smacking, chewing sounds, crushing ice. Oh, I'm with you on that. My neighbor to start his hot rod pickup at 4:30 a.m. every single morning. Oh my gosh, he might not be alive after the first week. going to work in rainy weather, it should be mandatory to cuddle up and read a book. This is my boss, by the way. So if you want to...
if you want to do that, let's do that.
if that's how you want it, boss lady.
She's the boss.
I'm all for it. I concur.
I'll sign the petition.
What do I need to do? What do I need to do? Anyway, so that's it. That's our show for tonight. Thank you, everybody. If you're still listening, we know you love us.
I love it whenever I'm like listening to y'all's end rants and you're like, man, y'all are still listening. We love you guys.
Because usually, we know everybody kind of tunes out, but we still love you.
I love you guys.
We love you guys. Anyway, we will see you. Fingers crossed. Ashley will be with us next week. We are.
Yes.
I know.
Poor thing.
And, but if you have any story ideas, if you have any question of the week ideas, please send them our way. We might have to pay Sarah to be a guest again.
No, I feel like I should pay y'all to let me be on there. Right? Isn't that how it should work?
Yes. That's it. That's the way.
I am happy. Every time I listen to y'all's show, I'm like, talking to y'all as if I'm on the show with y'all. And then whenever you mention me or are saying, oh, I don't really remember, I'm like yelling in my car, like, no, it's this or stuff like that.
Listen, I always Sarah's so going to say that we already said that before, y'all. But listen, we have an update. Yes. Batch.
I'm just a loyal follower and have a really and strange a harsh memory, critic, apparently, of y'all's show. It comes from love.
It does.
It really does.
All right, everybody. We will see you next week. But until then, please stay safe. And please, please, please be kind to one another. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Yes. Bye.